Welcome back, everybody, into Bills Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, another NFL draft in the books. We were live Thursday night watching all of round one unfold, which ended up with the Bills taking Max Harrison. And we now sit here on Sunday night recording this podcast that comes out Monday morning, knowing the entire 2025 Buffalo Bills draft class. We're going to get into it tonight. How are you doing?
Doing good. It was a very productive Sunday. Started off, I will say, by the way, with watching Liverpool secure their 20th league title and everything. Shout out Liverpool. So good vibes through after, like you said, a long but yet another successful enjoyment of the NFL draft season, I guess would be the way to put it. Not even necessarily in a Bills lens, but just overall as an NFL fan. It's always, as we talk about, one of our favorite times of year. And we just now get to sit back when that weekend comes and enjoy the entire process. When it comes to our live show, that was great. Although I got a little bit of a kink in my neck that won't go away after that. But we battled through it here. And then Friday and Saturday, you know, we just continued through the draft. And overall, I'm excited to kind of break down a little bit kind of the results of the Bills draft and where we stand when it comes to this class. Because I definitely think there will be some interesting discussion with a lot of these picks as we go through.
So nationally, the Bills are getting a lot of credit. They're getting a lot of high marks from folks that cover the draft as far as getting good value for where they got the picks. Right off the top, I think it's pretty obvious the Bills had their eye on the defensive side of the ball. Their first five picks were all defense. Six out of their first seven picks were defense. In fact, there was at one point that all their picks were defense except for a blocking tight end. And we kind of had this inkling going into the draft, not you and I, anybody that follows this team, but this could have been a defensive heavy draft. One, you talked all winter and spring about how deep this defensive line class was, and the Bills certainly dipped their toe into that depth multiple times. We talked about how this secondary needed an overhaul, watching back the AFC Championship game, just how slow and unprepared this secondary looked to play man coverage against the Chiefs, particularly after Christian Benford went out. The Bills add three new defensive backs to the mix in this draft class. But, you know, as long as we are doing this show, as long as the Bills have Josh Allen, you and I are going to refuse to be like, well, the offense is fine. Just focus on the defense. It feels like, Luca, despite the fact that, yes, they did draft a tight end. They drafted a tackle and a wide receiver with their last pick in the sixth round and their last pick overall in the seventh round. This was a draft where Brandon Bean even said in his post-draft press conference that this was an eye on defense. I hate the philosophy. I think draft should be best player available. You shouldn't go into drafts thinking we have to address X, Y, and Z. Look no further than Cole Bishop. And this has nothing to do with Cole Bishop specifically, but if you're expecting a rookie to come in and solve an issue for you, and that rookie gets to camp and can't beat out DeMar Hamlin, then now you've taken a pick, you've isolated it down to a need, and you haven't taken the best player available. I don't know if that's what the Bills did here. In fact, I do think that there's an argument to be made that maybe they did go BPA, and that's why they double-dipped at defensive tackle and triple-dipped at cornerback. But it does feel like, at least from where I'm sitting, Luca, and at least reading into what Brandon Bean said, the Bills went into the 2025 draft class looking to absolutely refuel the defensive pipeline, and they left the cupboard completely empty on offense. No new wide receivers except for a seventh-round flyer. No running back, which kind of surprised me. I didn't need a running back, but still kind of surprised me. Waited till the sixth round to even take a flyer on an offensive lineman. This was a Bobby Babich, who do you like? Sean McDermott, who do you like draft? And you better just hope that the offense can sustain the success they had last year, because they're not getting a lot of an influx of talent from this draft class.
Yeah, I just don't, like, as you're talking about, I don't agree with any sort of philosophy that will right from the jump isolate you or pigeonhole you into a specific thought. And what I mean by that is, okay, there's a point of emphasis on defense. I can understand if it feels like if you're tipping the scale between one thing and another, it ends up being on the defensive side of the ball because you have two things close. And maybe that just kept happening as every pick progressed. But I refuse to believe that that's how it actually broke down, especially considering the fact, Josh, that at one point in time, the Bills had three picks within eight total picks of each other. And how in the world can you come away from that with two corners, although one's just a defensive back and kind of a versatile DB in that, and then a blocking tight end, as we talked about, when you had other individuals, again, not sure if these were on their radar, but you had other individuals like Devin Neal, the running back out of Kansas, still sitting there entering the sixth round when you're staring down the barrel of, if just looking down the timeline here, staring down the barrel where James Cook is gone after this year, potentially because you cannot come to terms on a new agreement or an extension. And therefore you then have Ray Davis and maybe Ty Johnson, if you bring him back, or looking at next year's class, which, by the way, we also talked about, just like the defensive line, this was a fairly deep running back class, for instance. So I bring up Devin Neal because Devin Neal feels like the kind of player that would have probably been creeping into the fourth round potentially on your average year because of the experience and the ceiling that he brings, even at the age and some injury concerns that he has. It feels like he would have been a usual circumstance fourth, fifth round guy. He trickled all the way down to the early sixth round just due to the sheer quantity of running backs. I mean, Denver went out there and got RJ Harvey out of UCF earlier on. Jaden Blue fell all the way down to the fifth round for the Cowboys. And he feels like he might be a good weapon, like filling that Tony Pollard role,
yes,
that they were missing very much. So there's just all of these weapons that were sitting there and just kept falling. And yet Brandon Bean felt that there needed to be a focus on the defensive side of things. And I can understand that you looked at the AFC championship and it felt like the offense was at least doing okay, and yet your defense was really letting you down, of course, mainly in coverage, which can explain the three defensive backs you ended up taking, including that first round pick with Maxwell Harrison. But the looking at the class as a whole, this might be kind of showing our hand here, Josh. I don't agree with the philosophy and the thought process that went into it that then in turn produced the results that it did. And being just going back at that defensive line as deep as it was, as many kind of quality players that may have been there at some point in time, I refuse to believe that one of those individuals wasn't at least equal with maybe a wide receiver that was available, a running back that was available, whatever it might be, that could have at least bolstered the offensive side of the ball. That when you look at it, I mean, you and I are not Jordan Palmer truthers. It's pretty public on that one. From there, though, you are a Joshua Palmer.
Yeah, sorry,
I said Jordan Palmer. Jeez.
I was like, wow, Jordan Palmer catching strays.
Yeah.
You're right, Joshua Palmer. Yep.
Joshua Palmer. After Joshua Palmer, if Joshua Palmer gets hurt, you are looking at Curtis Samuel. You're looking at Laviska Shenault if he makes this team. I mean, we've already gotten there. KJ Hamler.
Tyrell Shavers,
Jalen Virgil. This seventh rounder that you finally took in Caden Prather, like, that is terrifying. Do I sit here on April 27th as we're recording? You may be listening on the 28th or later. May is right around the corner. But am I sitting here thinking that we're done? No, there's plenty of time. Maybe they will kind of readjust the depth, see where it's at, and maybe they're going to try to bring some more experience to that side via whether it's trades. Maybe there's someone in the free agency market, although I don't know who that would really be, that'll move the needle, but maybe there's something they'll address, and that wouldn't quite be as desperate as it seems. But I walking away from this draft in the situation that you have it, both in the now and the future, the cupboard is very barren on the offensive side, and you are just putting even more weight on that MVP at quarterback to carry the load and just make magic happen with the absolute B plus guys around them that just on any other day, they're going to, or any other team, they're going to be average production at best. average play at best and just be one of 53. And it's, I don't know. I walked away from the draft scratching my head a little bit with Bean's philosophy on everything.
Yeah, I'm with you. Let's just go through it. So in the first round, the Bills took Max. It did confirm he wants to go by Max. Max Harrison. We both liked this pick. Now, look, we were on the air live saying we hoped it would have been Luther Burden. We both kind of knew that they weren't going to go offense at that point in time. I think we were just hoping beyond anything. But, you know, you can read the tea leaves of this Bills offseason. They had a desperate need for a cornerback. They did not want to put themselves in a situation where they had to start Tre'Davious White in 2025 or Dane Jackson in 2025. And what we both liked about this pick, and you can go back and listen to it on our show, is when they were on the clock, there was a lot of momentum for Trey Amos. And Luca and I both viewed him as in a similar light, where second or third round, that's a home run pick, because he's probably going to come in, eventually earn a starting job, and hold it down for a few years. And that's a great value for second or third round. But in the first round, swing big, swing for the fences. This Bills team has a lot of B-plus players. They need a couple more A-plus players. They have one right now, Josh Allen. I would argue Spencer Brown and Deion Dawkins are in that A category as well. But how much can a tackle really make game-changing plays, especially on the defensive side of the ball? Do they have any A-plus players? So that's where we were thinking that, you know, take a shot on someone like a Revell. Take a shot on someone like the safety, Emenwore, you know, things like that. And where they didn't go after a Trey Amos, they do go after Max Harrison. You have the fastest 40 in the draft, elite ball skills. Now, he's not a great tackler, but this is a guy that turns the ball over. He makes plays on the ball. And I went back and listened to Chris Sims' podcast on corners, because I always like to go back and hear what he said. And I thought this was interesting, Luca. He said that Maxwell Harrison is fast enough that teams that can no longer play man coverage, he can fix that for you. And he said, we say that this is in February or March when he said this, we say this all the time about the Buffalo Bills. They get into a street fight with a team that has good weapons and they can't man up. They have to play zone and hope you make a mistake. And that's why they get beat in the playoffs. And he said something that I think is a hard truth for a lot of Bills fans. He said, when the Ravens figured that out, the Bills couldn't stop the Ravens, and the Ravens just screwed it up at the end. Now, I think the Bills played a little better than that in the second half. That last drive was pretty easy. But I think the point remains that the Bills don't have that club in their bag to play man coverage. Now with Benford and Harrison, if he hits, they have that club in their bag. And then the bigger picture thing is, this is a slow secondary that just added the fastest cornerback in the draft after adding one of the most athletic safeties in the draft last year in Cole Bishop. A very big breath of fresh air, assuming these players can hit and become starters on this team. So even though you and I seemed kind of ho-hum on the class overall, I thought it got off to a really strong start with the Harrison pick, Luca.
This was the most promising sign to the draft, in my opinion. This didn't feel like the way I believe the Bills to go. I mean, we logged off, we signed off after our live show, and I even told you just outright, he wasn't necessarily on my Bills radar, although I knew exactly who he was and everything, because he didn't fit the mold of the vast history that were previous Bills picks in this regime. I mean, he's elite athlete, of course, when it comes to speed and all of those intangibles, but a big knock on him is his open field tackling and just kind of needing to refine that part of his game and stuff. And it felt like up until this season that there was a lot of value put into that metric, or that kind of, you need a corner who can handle open field tackling. You need a corner who's sound in the run defending game. And it's like, at some point in time, you might need to just trust that you can build that up in a player who's got the other part of things known as team speed, or just speed in general, and just ball skills, and just being that home run guy in the secondary that can really turn a game on its head and just allow you to do something differently. Because for the longest time, it's been exactly as you said, you know, Sims mentioned on his podcast. And it feels like that's something we've all known. When the games get tough and when you actually get into those games that matter, there's a reason that it's got that change of feel. And all of a sudden, you always felt okay about the defense in the mid regular season. You always felt okay that the defense will figure it out in those games to stack up wins and get you your division title and all of that. But then all of a sudden the wild card comes around, even a game that should be, you know, easily managed, the divisional round, the Ravens in this past season, where it does have that vibe where just don't figure out what we're doing quick enough. And then as soon as they do, you can't change. And even with the halftime adjustments, we like to joke. I mean, it's not even joking. It's genuine. When they're making those halftime adjustments, there's only so much the Bills defense could do because they lacked that speed in the secondary and they lacked that ability to kind of just glove one-on-one on receivers across the board and match up well because of that. Max Harrison opens that up for you completely. And that makes all the sense in the world. Love the idea of everything that he brings to this defense, that it was surprising that the Bills went this route only because of the history of them really not feeling like that was the way they wanted to go. And it's something that I am, pass or fail in 3 years' time, I'm honestly happy they made that decision, because it felt like it was an absolute must at this moment in time. Because it's just, if they didn't and they went with a Trey Amos or they went with someone else like that, that's kind of just your melted vanilla ice cream on a cold day, you're going nowhere with it. You're doing the same old thing. Why would you expect any other different result? You needed to do something different, especially at the secondary position, especially at that boundary corner position. They did exactly that with this pick.
As my microphone falls down. The other thing I really like about him, his ball skills, his aggression on the ball. I've always liked when you build a secondary, particularly when you have a cornerback the level of a Christian Benford that other teams will try to avoid. I like having that ball hawk on the other side. Think back to Antoine Winfield and Nate Clements. Antoine Winfield was the number one cornerback in that duo, but Nate Clements was a ball hawk that would take chances. And that worked because they would go after Clements because they didn't want to mess with Winfield. In a world we live in now where defenses or offenses are going to avoid Christian Benford if they can, if Harrison's out there, they're going to be throwing at him. Good, because the ball's in the air, he's going to make a play on it. So I like that combination. I hope he gets on the field, Luke. And I really hope that they learn from some of the mistakes they made with Kyer Elam, where they felt like they had to baby him along. And I hope there's lessons to be learned all around on the Bills side of things. I wish Kyer Elam the best, but I got to be honest. This is a guy they took with the 30th pick. I get the fact that the Bills are a Super Bowl contending team and the 30th pick in the draft shouldn't be guaranteed anything. I'll be at least a little bit peeved if he's not starting week one for the Bills.
Yeah, it's who else are you going to be starting is really just where my head comes to it. If he shows a little bit of rawness in camp and stuff where McDermott's just not fully sold on the idea or Babich is not sold on that idea, sure. But what in the world behind him makes you feel like it's better overall for this team to win and be good defensively? Because maybe you have someone that's a little bit more sound there for you, but ultimately it's the slow bleed versus the, hey, live and die by the edge of the sword. Like I don't, as you're pointing out perfectly, you have your blanket coverage on the one side where that is going to be the best you can possibly get over there. It's your number one corner. You know exactly what you're getting. It's all pro level at its best. Put the guy on the other side that can absolutely turn it on its head because of who he is and how he plays. Mm-hmm. And you brought up the Clements thing. I think I even mentioned that to you. He's Nate Clements with speed. It's just let him be that dog. If he gets beat on a double move by, you know, a great receiver in the NFL, his rookie season, that could happen to anyone. Just let him take those chances and let him live the way he is, because eventually he'll pick up on things and get even better in that game, where now you can still have that game breaker on the other side who's learning the tricks of the trade. And it's a situation where it does feel like, because you don't really have any better option anyways, just let them learn by fire. Just trust that it's the right thing to do in the long run. And hopefully even throughout this season in the near future, it progresses as the time comes and he keeps seeing things in front of him that he understands what the heck's going on.
So Max Harrison was the first pick. The Bills came back on Friday night and had two picks. They had a pick in, they actually had two picks in round two, but because of a trade up to make the pick at pick 41, they moved their second pick back to pick 72 overall in round three. They traded up for defensive tackle TJ Saunders. And Luca, this was a trade up. I think that one, there was a clear run on defensive tackles. We saw it in the first round that kind of boxed the Bills out, especially with the Tyleek Williams pick a couple picks before Harrison went. There's at least some rumblings out there that the Bills may have even been interested in taking him had he still been on the board and Detroit not taking him. But TJ Sanders is the pick for the Bills at number 41. And I think you and I were on the right side of history on this, where we kind of warned folks even during the lead up that I know it feels like, and trust me, I feel it, that the Bills could use a big space eating defensive tackle as a one technique and take on double teams, and, you know, Ted Washington, Pat Williams, someone of that ilk. But that's just not the scheme they run. When you look historically at what this team does at defensive tackle, they want one man, one gap. They want penetration up front. And even like their one technique is somebody they want to be able to push the pocket. And that's just been the style that these Bills have played. And look no further than when they had Puna Ford on their roster. They couldn't get him on the field. They couldn't find a role for that guy. So then you have TJ Sanders, who, if you're looking for a one technique that's going to come in and eat up double teams, that's not him. But if you take that lens off, you can really get your mind wrapped around why this kid was a strong pick, because he can push the pocket. He is a very strong pass rusher. He's going to play close to about 300 pounds. He does hold up well in the run game, but he's not somebody that's going to take on double teams. But when you start thinking about what he and Ed Oliver could even do side by side in pure third and long situations, if he hits his ceiling, this is a guy that can impact the passing game. And I saw Matt Miller comp him to a guy that I used to love, and I know you used to love, Darnell Dockett, who played for the Cardinals a couple decades ago. I mean, that would be, holy cow, what a home run pick that would be if that's what the comp ends up being. So I give the Bills credit, because all along you and I just rolled our eyes at, you really want to spend a high premium pick on a two down run stuffing space eating defensive tackle that doesn't impact the passing game at all in 2025. They didn't do that. Brandon Bean did say that they're going to kick Dwayne Carter over to one technique. Sanders and Oliver are going to be the three techniques. But you know, it's kind of interchangeable in the Bills scheme. You and I were in front of that. We even mentioned that during the lead up. And I thought this pick made sense value wise. It made sense need wise, especially when you factor in the Larry Ogunjobi suspension, which shouldn't have been factored in at all. It's six games. You're drafting for the next 10 years, not the next six games. But the side of me that wanted a receiver was disappointed. But when I take that lens out and I look at what the Bills roster looked like, and I looked at, if you're going to take a defensive tackle, this is the kind of defensive tackle I want. So I can't be too angry about it. So I guess I would give this one like a solid B. Where are you at on the TJ Sanders pick?
I kind of have a B minus kind of thought process on this one. And I feel like that's even me just making sure I have a more neutral lens on it, similar to kind of how you described what you need to be about it. But simply put, it's hard for me to sit here and truly love and fall in love with a pick as of right now, understanding what they gave. It's not a massive jump they made, but it is a jump. And in order to do that, to get a TJ Sanders, when you had the likes of Mike Green, an edge rusher I personally like, Tui Amaulau, edge rusher out of Ohio State. I butchered his name brutally. I think he's going to be a phenomenal pick for what it's worth with the Colts. He went a couple picks later. You know, like you said, this is a pass rush style three technique, you know, defensive tackle. So it is a pass rush player, but not in the traditional sense. And it felt like edge was something that you can stomach a little bit more moving up for, and something that the Bills need still. They absolutely need more pass rush on the edge. That is, it's going to be, leaving this draft, spoiler alert, still a need on this team. So it's something where I was surprised what they did in order to move up. But yes, if you take that away and just look at the player himself, there is a lot to like about the player. I mean, I love in the one notes that I read here where he's scheme versatile, where he can go from 0 to 5 on the technique chart, just across the board. He can line up anywhere effectively. And also he does have kind of a pass rush repertoire to him. He can do a lot of different things in that part of his game, and he's violent while doing it. So I love, at least also on top of it, Bean's explanation of what they actually look for in the draft from a interior defensive lineman, and ultimately what they're trying to do with that kind of pick. You can find a one technique, you know, I don't mean this in any crude way, but you can find a one technique fatty on the street a lot easier in free agency than you can find these pass rush three techniques and interior defensive linemen. And you got to find those guys in the draft. And I respect, at least in a vacuum, I respect that entirely, because I find that to be true. I think that's valid. And it's hard for me to sit here during a draft and go, I'm thrilled that they just drafted this 410-pound defensive tackle that I know is going to be on the field 35% of every game. And his job is just to basically be a Snorlax and sit there and make sure you get double teamed and don't move. Like that's a pretty low ceiling to have on a player where that's their role and that's their job. You need those guys, but spending a draft pick to find one feels, at least in the premium spots, your 1, 2, and 3, feels less the place to do it than free agency or even late on the draft if one of them exists that at least you have some sort of inkling to. So I can't ultimately hate this pick. It's one that I wasn't in the moment. I definitely wasn't over the moon about. I think that was also partially due to Luther Bird in the third going 2 picks prior to Chicago. That definitely plays a factor in it, but ultimately I think he could definitely be someone, my most promising thing to lean on. He could be someone that comes in, especially with a heavy rotation on the defensive line, and maybe even pick up the slack that we see at times when Ed Oliver is having days off. He could be that guy that kind of finally creates a little bit more consistency overall at that spot. Whereas you would find those games where Ed Oliver is essentially invisible, all of a sudden you have another option there on the interior to pass rush and dominate games, you know, time to time.
And, you know, the Bills don't make any secret about it. They believe that the game is won and lost at the line of scrimmage, and they admit they are going to continue to pump resources, premium resources, into the defensive line until they get it where they want it to be. And you look, last year, they spent a 3rd-round pick on Dwayne Carter. This year, they spent a 2nd-round pick on TJ Sanders. They spent a 4th-round pick on another defensive tackle. So they are continuing to pump these resources in just to the defensive tackle position. And then you get to the 3rd-round, Luka, and the Bills come off with defensive end Landon Jackson. And I have to chuckle because I saw Matt Miller's comp to him, for him, was AJ Epinesa, which just feels right. Landon Jackson is, I think he was a crowd favorite for Bills fans. I know he's a guy that the Bills fans kind of knew that the Bills were into because he was a top 30 visit. He was a guy that was linked to the Bills. But Luca, your point here is, yeah, can he get on the field right away and help the Bills? Absolutely. I expect him to be active on game day and probably playing over every defensive end that's not named Greg Rousseau and Joey Bosa. I think there's a chance he'll outsnap AJ Epinesa this year. I think he's that good in certain areas. But as you will mention, the areas that he struggles in tend to be the areas that are the most important in NFL football 2025.
Landon Jackson is not going to be one of those guys that's going to be seeking a massive second contract. What I mean by that is, I mean, I'm just saying that for a point purpose. Maybe something happens by that point that he really develops another gear to his game. But as it stands right now, when you have these kinds of criticisms, limited bend and flexibility, initial get off is methodical, not explosive, plays too high generally in the pass rush, allowing blockers to dominate him from the inside, not a natural space player. These are all big flags when it comes to pass rushing ability. And he is a great tackle for loss, edge contain machine. That is what he is. I told you before we got in, we got a bigger, more athletic Shaq Lawson. That is what Landon Jackson provides. That is genuinely what he will provide, especially when it comes to day one, it feels like. I mean, he ran a 4.68 at the combine. His vert's 40. He's 6'6". He's a big, big dude. He is a run defending edge. That is what they just drafted in the third round. There is a place where this team needs that fully through. When we've been going into games, it does feel like a lot of those run heavy teams, they generally target either they design a lot of like creative runs to the side where you see Rousseau, or it's let's just make sure we focus on going to the opposite of Rousseau. If Rousseau's lining up on the Bills left, they're right. We're running a lot more to the left. If Rousseau's mixing it up and all of a sudden you see him on the left, we're going to be going to the right. That seems to be the, especially with the outside zone run scheme style teams, that seems to be the thought process. And you needed to bring in someone that could at least hold that edge, contain it, keep it inside, and ultimately limit the big play runs that can happen when you bounce them outside. I want to make sure I say this. I don't hate the pick. I actually like the pick. I think Landon Jackson is a very interesting prospect where if you can get some sort of pass rush ability from him, there's a lot to like. And maybe if you can do that in a quick fashion, he will get that big second contract. I just don't see it right now. And ultimately, he addresses a need on this team. It's a very low ceiling need. It's a very niche need. But also, as we always say with these defensive linemen, they're really only going to play a certain percentage of time as well. That for the immediate future, that's probably all you need from him as you work on that other stuff. I'm not going to sit there, though, come next season and the year after that and be expecting any sort of pass rush from this guy as it stands right now, because it just doesn't feel like that's something in his bag. And he will just have to work on continuing to be that dependable run defending edge for us, that he's going to be out there every first and second down when it feels like that's the need that has to be out there. And he's a very smart player as well. He's heady. And again, tackle for loss machine. That is what he is. That's his ceiling to me. He will make sure he gets to that backfield in the runner very, very quick, but he's not someone that's going to get to the quarterback, which is of course a big need. And also the need that generally gets paid. And that's where I start to have a little bit of an issue with it. That's again, why I'm going to give this one. Like if I had a letter grade it, it's going to be a C plus B minus kind of pick. It's not great, but at the same time, it's not bad. Like I'm not going to, you know, write home about it, but at the same time, I can see it being impactful for the Bills. He's definitely someone that I would be shocked if he doesn't make the roster. He's going to probably be game day active every week. And ultimately, like I said, he's probably going to be at some point in time preferred in the run defending game. And when they rotate in and they're trying to really mitigate the run of the opposition, he will probably be on the forefront of that alongside Rousseau on the other side. So can't hate it all overall, but also this is not exactly what you call a sexy edge defender pick for this draft.
And he is a very good athlete and he's long. So there is room to grow if he can develop these pass rush moves, but it's hard to learn those at the NFL level. We shall see. But in the third round, the flyer makes sense. So the Bills, after day two, had taken two defensive linemen and a cornerback. They come back on day three, Luca. They trade up in the fourth round. And a lot of folks were thinking, oh, wow, Jalen Royals is about to be a Bill. Nope. The Bills double dip at defensive tackle. And look, in all fairness, we've been saying all spring that this is a deep defensive line class. Wouldn't be stunned if the Bills took two shots here. They've now taken their third defensive lineman in their first four picks. And they do so going back to the University of Kentucky and taking Deion Walker. And what an interesting story he is, because he's a massive human being, 6'7", 328 pounds. If you had just gone back to 2023, there was some talk that he could have been a first round pick, but his tape in 2024 was much worse. There was a back injury that came up during the medical rechecks at the combine that he didn't even know he played with. And Joe Marino from Locked On Bills. I don't want to just restate what he said, but Joe Marino hates this player. Not personally, but just hates the skill set. Says, essentially, he's a big guy that doesn't play big. If you think about the human body and where you want the weight to be proportioned for a defensive tackle, the low man wins, but all his weight is high. He has an unimpressive lower body, and he plays high. But I will say, he has some uncoachable skills. He's 328 pounds. He's 6'7". He has very good athleticism for his size. He's a guy that has a basketball background. He played almost 50% of his snaps at Kentucky at three technique, rushing the passer. So there is a lot of potential here to mold. I know when a lot of fans saw this as like a 328 pounder, like, oh, there's our nose tackle. I don't think so. I think this is a guy that, at least early on, maybe they mold him into something. I think it's going to remind you a lot of Jordan Phillips, where he may only play 30% of the snaps a game if he's active on game day. But I think maybe his best skill right now is rushing the passer. I don't know that he's a great two-gapper. Not that the Bills even ask for that. But if they wanted to fix their defense, they double-dipped at defensive tackle. I'm saying this so I'm blue in the face. I would not have gone this defensive heavy with this draft. They chose to. The value makes sense. If you're going to take a defensive tackle here, he made sense. This is where I think a guy like this is good value for, where he has unteachable traits, but you just have a lot of skills you want to mold out of him. Not thrilled, Luca, with so far 4-for-4 on defense, but not taking that out of it. I think, again, all four of these picks, the value was pretty good based on like the consensus big boards. They didn't reach for any of these guys.
This wasn't a reach, but this is also just not a pick I would have made personally.
Yeah.
I don't know where the Bills board was. This is the one that kind of goes to where I led off this podcast from. I don't know what their board looked like, but I find it very, very difficult to understand how Deion Walker stacked up above. I mean, you'd mentioned Jalen Royals. Jalen Lane would be there as well, a wide receiver out of Va-Tech. You have even the running back, Dylan Sampson. Mm-hmm. He was sitting there. There are other guys there. Just I'm looking at the offensive side of the ball. There's even on the defensive side of the ball, just other players. Trevor Etienne, another running back, for instance, that's there. I have it ultimately there. Malachi Moore, the safety out of Alabama, he goes another 21 picks later. There are the intangibles. I mean, wingspan of 84.5 inches. That's absurd. As you kept mentioning, he is a big, big, big individual. But when you even see something like he did the vertical at the combine and it was 25 inches, that's like, okay. So he can't get off the ground. Like I could do that. That's head scratchingly concerning. And when you read a lot of like tendencies, weaknesses with this individual, stuff like that, and it's like conditioning is a major concern, plays very high pad level consistently. Initial burst off the snap is extremely inconsistent and sluggish looking a lot of times. Like, those are things that are very, very concerning. We're talking about a fourth round pick, so it's also hard to be overly critical. But fourth round is generally the time where you can reshuffle your board and maybe try to steal better value there. I mean, that's why you saw other individuals get picked where they did, like Tootin at 104 to the Jags. Like, someone was like, oh crap, this speedy running back right here is still there. We're going to go snag him early on in the draft. You know, let's go get him. That's why then the Jags kind of made that possible. This is one that feels very bust possible, like it bust a fourth round pick.
Right.
This is one that wouldn't even surprise me if somehow it's really not working out after, you know, training camp. And when it comes down to roster cut down, this is a guy you probably are easily like, look, he's very, very raw. He's not figuring it out. It's hard to learn in the NFL. Like you said, pass rush moves and just the ability to rush the passer as well as you can, even in a rotation where all he'll see is 20 snaps at best. is it even worth it to have him there? And the answer could easily be no. I don't know. You can say that it's value all you want, and you could say that you just really wanted to address defensive tackle, and you think you got, if your ceiling is Jordan Phillips for this guy, honestly, that'd be a great ceiling, just to be honest. But I don't even see that being very likely. I don't know where this ultimately will work for this team. I don't know how the value was that much there at 109 to make that pick with a lot of other things available. This is where the head scratching truly began with this draft. So as you can imagine, Saturday was a difficult one for myself, at least. I'm not a fan at all. Like, my letter grade on this one is a D, and that's just because I don't hand out Fs unless it's just an absolute cataclysmic failure. I just, you know, if they drafted Will Howard here or something like that, that would be an F, because I'd be like, what are we doing? But even then, it would be hard for me to F it, because maybe Will Howard's a better backup than Mitch Trubisky. So it's I don't know. I'm not a fan of the Deion Walker pick. I'm just going to be blue in the face and brutally honest on it. I do not care for this pick. I didn't understand it at the time. I'm still sitting here over a day later, still questioning everything about it. I don't like it. There was just way better ways to go about it, in my opinion. And honestly, I was just happy that they didn't go back at defensive tackle anymore after this.
I just question the plan, because you have Ed Oliver on a massive second contract. Daquan Jones is still here for another year. He's the best one technique on the team right now, by far, even though he's not as good as he once was. You took Dwayne Carter in the third round last year. That was the whole, like, hey, we traded it down with the Chiefs, but we got this third round pick that was Dwayne Carter. And look, we've done this game before, where after 1 year, we were like, wow, Terrell Bernard's pretty terrible at football. And he turns it around. We did the same thing with Dorian Williams, and he turned it around. So would not surprise me in the least if that was Carter this year. But let's just start adding him up. Ed Oliver going to be on this team. Daquan Jones going to be on this team. Dwayne Carter, third round draft pick from last year, going to be on this team. TJ Sanders, second round pick from this year, going to be on this team. Four. Larry Ogunjobi, 6-game suspension, so not going to be on the roster for the first 6 games, but you would assume when they signed him, it was with the thought process of him going to be on this team. And now you have a fourth round pick in Carter, not Carter, excuse me, Walker. Yeah, Walker, fourth round pick should make the team. I've always been of the mindset, Luca, the first 4 rounds of the draft, I mean, not every draft is equal, so you can't say it as a blanket statement, but the first 4 rounds, it's an awful look if any of those guys don't make your team. They should not only be on your team, but finding ways to contribute year one. Like, maybe it's a situation where your fourth round pick just gets squeezed because it's a numbers game and he's game day inactive. I can live with that. But now you have 6 defensive tackles I just named. They're not all making the team. So what are you doing with your assets? What are you doing with your resources? Why are you continuing to pump resources into the same position? And massive deal for Ed Oliver, veteran deal for Daquan Jones, veteran deal for Larry Ogunjobi, second round pick, third round pick, fourth round pick in the last 2 drafts. It's overkill. And the only thing I could think of, and if I want to give the Bills credit for this, which I think, you know, I don't know that you're ready to buy this based on your evaluation of Walker, and I'm with you. I don't love the player. I feel like the only justification for this, Luca, is maybe he was just clear as day the best player on the board. And maybe they didn't come into this thinking we have to double dip at defensive tackle. But let's just say they had like a second round grade on him, and we get to round 4. Everybody else is sitting there with a day 3 grade. But what the part that just I can't get my head wrapped around is they traded up aggressively for him. So it's not like they were just sitting there and he fell to them and they're like, we have to do this. Our scouts are telling us he's 2 rounds better than everybody else. Like, no, they targeted him and went up to get him. So I'm having a hard time with the numbers game of it all, Luca.
When you look at it, they did that with both defensive tackles in this draft. They targeted them. They moved up somewhat aggressively to then go get them. And with the first, you can understand there's a little disappointment, but now looking at the player, it's like, okay, pass rush ability could really provide something else. We talked about it, everything with TJ. With Daylon Walker, it's just, head scratchingly confused. Like, I don't understand the move to move up and then make that decision. As you said, the only reason you're moving up like that to get this player is because you truly evaluated him at such a higher grade than where the draft board was currently breaking down that you felt the need to ensure you could get that value and go snag it before it eventually walked away from you. And I don't know. You see that the Eagles draft Ty Robinson, a defensive tackle out of Nebraska, two picks later. They are not apples to apples as defensive tackles, for what it's worth. And then CJ West happens two picks after that. So maybe they just felt, whether it was, you know, just by pure coincidence and or they had some source of knowledge that the Eagles and the Niners were going to be also going in at defensive tackle, interior defensive line, whatever it was. And they just felt that that would maybe be where they would lose this guy. So that's why they did it. If so, pay those sources because they're really, really smart. But also, I don't see it with this player individually on why you needed to do it. But I always like to say this, and I'll say it probably by the end of this pod another time. I want to be proven wrong. That's always what I come away with, especially when I have reactions to picks like this. I want to be proven wrong. As someone that loves to be right, as everyone saw on the draft show as well, I love to be right. But this is when I want Bean to prove me wrong. I want Walker to succeed. I want it to work because he does have size that would make it a lot of fun if he works out. Just right now, it's extremely difficult to figure out how that is going to happen.
Yeah, and we'll just have to see. There's a part of me that wonders if the timing of the Larry Ogunjobi suspension, the Bills did say they knew about Michael Hoyt, they didn't know about Ogunjobi. It makes me wonder if the Bills are just at this point thinking, like, he's only making the team if an injury happens at defensive tackle. Maybe they just don't want him on the roster. I could see that. So the four premium picks, you know, first four rounds are gone. We can kind of blow through these last ones, and I'm not even going to go in order here. The next five picks, they go defensive back out of Ohio State, Jordan Hancock, tight end out of Georgia Tech, Jackson Hawes. Is that how you pronounce it? Hawes?
I think so, yeah.
Cornerback out of Virginia Tech, Dorian Strong, tackle out of UConn, Chase Lunt, and then finally took a wide receiver in the seventh round, 240 picks into this thing, Caden Prather. Let's talk about the two defensive backs, Jordan Hancock and Dorian Strong. And I endorse both of these picks because I love Tre'Davious White. Okay. I don't have any desire to see Tre'Davious White like have his Bills career end by getting cut, but I can't deny what I saw last year out of him in LA and then in Baltimore and what, you know, the reality of his injury situation is. And then we all know what Dane Jackson is. And now he's even older than he was when he was here before. And he was never the fastest guy. So I'll just tell you this. I'm not saying Max Harrison is going to be Kyrie Elam. I'm not. But Dorian Strong, the third defensive back they took, there's some parallels to the Christian Benford double dip with Kyrie Elam, where you take the super athletic, fun SEC corner with all kinds of upside that has like all world talent. And then you just take Mr. Fundamentals in the sixth round, who may not pop as much athletically, but it's hard to imagine him just not having a spot somewhere in this league, and Dorian Strong also in the sixth round. I could see a world, and I this might be strong. I could see a world where all three of these defensive backs make this team. I really could. I think Jordan Hancock, Luca, the Bills listed him deliberately, I think, as defensive back and not cornerback. Brandon Bean mentioned he could play slot, he could play safety, he could play special teams. I think there is a very, very strong possibility he plays Cam Lewis off this roster. I'm a big Cam Lewis fan, but he's not getting any younger. He's not getting any cheaper. I think Jordan Hancock could play Cam Lewis off this roster. I think Dorian Strong could play either Tre'Davious White or Dane Jackson off this roster. And then you're looking at a cornerback room of Christian Benford, Maxwell Harrison, Taron Johnson, and then Dorian Strong. And then Jordan Hancock is just kind of like your fifth corner, backup slot, backup safety, special teams ace. And now you've gotten younger, you've gotten cheaper, and you've gotten significantly more athletic in the secondary. And that is check, check, check for me. So I know I don't love all defense, but I absolutely endorse the fact that they went with three defensive backs, all of which have very strong athletic profiles.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal point you're making here. You say you wouldn't be surprised, or, you know, whatever light it is, of all these DBs making it. I would actually be surprised if they don't all make it. That I mean that in the respect of your point of Hancock kind of playing Cam Lewis off this roster, that feels there. And then on top of it all, we bring up the Damar Hamlin, Taylor Rapp. You have your second round pick from last year that you're trying to still develop, Cole Bishop, but is maybe Hancock going to be an answer even at just safety in general as well? Someone that does have the ability and experience to do something like that, at least at a high level in college. Ohio State's pretty dang high level. They did just win a national championship. So that you have that, but then Dorian Strong, my favorite thing about the Dorian Strong pick quite simply was Dorian Strong gets picked. I remember even thinking, I know who he is. It's not as if I wrote down notes on him and stuff like that. But so I go to the one resource that I like to just as a baseline and understand where things are. And as I did it, as I was sitting on a couch watching that pick being made, and just they cut to some clips of his ability, which again are highlights. So of course they're not going to show you bad things unless they're trying to show something that is a low light for this player. They normally do that for the, you know, more blue chip types because they have the time to do so. But as you're sitting there watching highlights of Dorian Strong, Josh, all you're seeing is just Christian Benford. It was like looking in a mirror and being like, yeah, this is just like Christian Benford. He's not the most athletic when it comes to speed, but he has that like game length. It's not even, you look at his measurables, his wingspan is 75 inches. That's pretty mid-tier. Arms individually are 30 inches, 31 inches. That's not eye-popping. That's not crazy long. But then you watch it and he's recovering with all of his body, playing the ball at all times. He's not trying to go up and make an immaculate pick, but at the same time, he's always making sure he's getting a hand on the ball. Like doing, as you said, the fundamentals, he's doing those things right. He's making sure it's really difficult for you to beat him over top. And he's a little bit smaller poundage wise than you would like for a man of his size, height, but overall he does kind of have that Benford like feel that it just makes it so funny how it's in this draft. We had the podcast a few weeks ago where we were talking about DBs and was there a lesson to be learned from that draft 3 years ago that they could take going into this? Apparently, whether it was by coincidence or not, yes, there was a lesson to be learned. It was, hey, try it again. Because if Hairston, for whatever reason, does not work out, maybe this guy does, and maybe you find your gem in the rough that is Dorian Strong. And at the end of the day, if you come away with a starting caliber outside corner from this draft, it doesn't matter that it came from the first round or the sixth round. You're going to pay the guy who's actually going to be great for you, as Christian Benford did for this defense, and at least hasn't left it as a complete barren wasteland of DBs. That, yeah, this, unlike the defensive tackle situation in this draft class, Josh, big, big fan of what they did from the DB aspect and kind of addressing the secondary, which was a massive issue both in the now and the future, where it feels like there is now some more pieces being brought in that can ultimately maybe steady it out a little bit and put this in a lot better of a position from now through week one.
Speaking of day three picks that we both think are going to make the roster, the tight end Jackson Hawes out of Georgia Tech, best blocking tight end in the draft by almost all accounts. The Bills have a very big opening at third tight end on this roster, with Quentin Morris moving on via free agency this offseason. The only competition for Jackson Hawes is really Zach Davidson, who didn't, you know, outside of some nice catches in preseason last year, did not show any acumen for blocking. You know, the Bills are going to prioritize blocking in that spot, especially with a draft pick that they have 4 years of roster control over. I think, Luca, it would be almost shocking if he's not the third tight end, barring injury or something we can't project come September.
He feels like a package blocking tight end that's going to maybe even make more of an impact to you than you would expect from a late fifth round pick on this roster. He will be your lead block for your Kincaid flare outs, your Shakir screens, all the fun stuff where you're just trying to get out to space quick and then have a man, you know, 5 yards downfield to create a seal and give a little bit of a lane for whoever's got the ball in their hands. I haven't technically as recorded made the thumbnail for this, but if you're watching on YouTube, there's a reason I chose the photo that I will be editing in of this individual that is Jackson Hawes. He doesn't have the ball in his hands. He's actually lead blocking because that's probably going to be his job in the NFL for the foreseeable future. I love that anything about him kind of talks about very limited catchability. And the one resource that we both use, I laughed very, very hard, probably too hard, because it had his deep catch ability at a 0%. And that's probably just because there's absolutely no data on it. Like I'd find it very hard to believe that if there were at least 5 deep targets for someone, that somehow they would have gotten a 0% on this. It would probably be very, very low if, say, he went 0-for-5 with a couple drops. But overall, yeah, he's a 0 because that's just not his game. That's not what he is. I did see one or two comments, Josh. I feel like when this pick happened, where it was like, what are we doing? Just drafting a only blocking tight end. Look no further than last year's draft. The Arizona Cardinals took Tip Raymond, who's exclusively a blocking tight end, in the 3rd round. So 5th round is nothing. You could be doing this on day 2. I think overall it's a pick I'm actually pretty fond of because it's something that this team values. And on top of it, really did need to get a little bit better for those style of plays. I bring up the Kincaid flare outs and stuff, plays that they just love to go to regularly. And it those plays a lot of times feel like you're leaving meat on the bone. You're really not getting the production out of it that you could. And maybe this is the type of individual you bring into that and teach what you need to do that will actually elevate that play a little bit more and make it a little bit of a better weapon in your arsenal for the offensive play calling.
Yeah. And I think there's also a chance that he's going to be the guy that when Josh Allen goes under center to quarterback sneak, he's the guy that motions over and pushes Josh Allen from behind. I just get that feeling. He's going to be that guy. All right, Luke, we have a couple minutes left. Let's talk about the last two picks. Anything stand out to you about either the tackle Chase Lunt they got in round 6, pick 206, or the wide receiver they finally took, Caden Prather, round 7, 240. I mean, we're talking about late round 6, early round 7, so I don't expect you to have like in-depth analysis on either of these guys, but anything from the little bit of research you've been able to do the last couple of days stand out?
Flyer practice squad guys. I will say on the offensive tackle front, really feels like, hey, we like a couple things with this guy. He's got some lateral movement to him. Let's put him in the hands of Cromer and see what he can do out of it. If you get a gem out of him, that's one of the best 6th round picks at an offensive tackle position you could possibly ask for. So time will tell with it. But overall, yeah, they both feel like project practice squad at best, you know, just let's see what we got there. But you shouldn't really expect anything from either of these individuals.
Yeah. And Tylan Grable is a guy that came on last year and then got injured and then, you know, had Ryan Vandermark still there. And, you know, he's a mountain of a man. So, and then Alec Anderson is still there. So, you know, a long road ahead for this, this tackle who I've already
Chase Lunt
to make the roster. But I think, you know, like you said, practice squad's great. He gets a year of basically free mentorship from Aaron Cromer, and I'm totally fine with as long as Aaron Cromer is the Bills O-line coach. Day 3, find me somebody who's intriguing. Aaron, let me know who you want to work with because he has a track record at this point where I would just, hey, give him anybody. Give him anybody he wants. Let's put him in the pipeline. Let's see what happens. The Bills have some very interesting names from last year. We'll see what happens with Grable. We'll see what happens with Travis Clayton. And we'll see what happens with Lund here. As far as the receiver goes, look, the Bills, I guess, get credit for finally drafting a receiver. But in my mind, whoever they drafted in this draft should have been good enough on draft day to feel like, okay, well, Virgil, Shavers, Chenault, you guys all are not making this roster, barring like the training camp of your absolute lives. We're not there. The guy, I already forgot his name. Caden Prather. just a little bit that I've read on him. He sounds just like throw him in a bag with those guys. We'll see if he happens to make the roster. It's going to really come down to, can these guys cover kicks? Because do any of them have return skills? I mean, Chenault has a little bit of that. Is he going to be on the practice squad? Who knows? This is not something that I would say is going to impact this team. You never know. I'll take you all back to 2007. The Bills spent a second round pick on James Hardy and a seventh round pick on a wide receiver out of Kentucky named Stevie Johnson. This was a pretty heavy Kentucky draft, by the way. So you never know. You just never know how these things are going to go. Nobody knew who Christian Benford was when the Bills took him, and he was a starter on opening night against the Rams on national TV. So you never know. But at least from the outset, Luca, doesn't seem like the Bills did much to help the receiver group. Excuse me, as my voice is finally tapping out. Overall, final thoughts on this draft class before we put a bow on this episode.
Underwhelming. The draft was just underwhelming as a whole from the Bills. And, you know, I hinted at it early on. We kind of went at it. It started strong as it felt like it almost possibly could have. But overall, I mean, there's a couple little bit of shining lights in it. There's some guys that, you know, ultimately I think could maybe produce a little bit more than we expect here in April. But it's just, we can pound the drum for a while now, although I feel like there's no need to, because all eyes should be now on schedule and kind of what is the season that will be the regular season, how it will break down. It's less roster. It's more about games. That's where our focus will be. But the last thoughts really on this class is, simply put, just very, very underwhelming. There's some head scratching moments and picks. There's some guys where it's like, I can see where you're coming from with this and the value might be good, but even that player himself might have a little bit of a weird ceiling to him, or a low ceiling, or just, again, an underwhelming feel to them that you ordered a 12 ounce steak and then all of a sudden sent back 8 ounces of it because you just didn't enjoy the taste of it. That's what this feels like right now. I'm not saying it's a disaster class, but I really, really, really am hoping I'm proven wrong on this class in the near future, even, and we see a lot more impact out of it than what it feels like it has from the surface race as of right now.
I'm hoping we're proven wrong on Joshua Palmer, because boy, they have a lot of chips in his basket. So my thing is, the Bills are now in a situation where you need Keon Coleman to develop. You need Khalil Shakir to keep taking a step. You need Kincaid to be great. That's why I would have endorsed Luther Burden in the second round, why I would have endorsed Kyle Williams, even though we didn't love him in the first round. Along the way, I would have endorsed Royals, because you put them in the pipeline, and if Keon Coleman doesn't take a step, then you have like a real prospect there that has a chance of developing. And I would just, as long as Josh Allen is the quarterback, I would never let a draft like this just go by without and when you have 10 picks coming into it, where you wait until the very last pick you have to take a stab at a receiver. I just would never do that. The Bills, don't ask my opinion. They went defensive heavy. And for their sake, their season better not end in January where they can't get a stop to save their lives on defense. So we'll see what happens. Overall, this class got a lot of positive reviews. They certainly tried to get an influx of talent on defense. And hopefully, like Lucas said, hopefully we are proven wrong in some of our skepticism, some of these players. But another draft in the books. These Bills are certainly going to be one of the few teams that have a chance to compete for a Super Bowl this year, regardless of what happens with this rookie class. And it'll all start taking place in a couple of weeks, I think, when minicamp happens. I think it's actually a week or two from now. We shall see. But for Luca, I am Josh McCarty. This has been a bow on what has been a very fun NFL draft weekend, and we will see you next time on Bills Chat.